Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. Big show today. Got a ton of takes, ton of content, some really good interviews. I'm fired up. Nice to be with you on this Wednesday, broadcasting live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices. Every day, let's get after this thing. Good day to talk sports. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Decide when you want to call. Better yet, decide what you want to talk about and then decide when you want to call. Sorry, my bad. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. You know that. Also email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The interview is set up like this. Mick Cronin, basketball coach at Cincinnati, joins me in about 15 minutes later on this hour, and I'm very pumped for this. Hockey Hall of Famer Paul Kariya joins us. Love Paul Kariya. What a great player he was. Amazing player here in SoCal. And he does not do a lot of media, so the fact that he's going to come in and he's going into the Hockey Hall of Fame hypes me up. That's coming up later on this hour. 40 past the hour, Paul Kariya joins us. Second hour is wide open. In the third hour, we're talking Jacksonville Jaguar football again. You know, if I were to break this thing down and look at the interviews that I've done this year, the takes that I've done this year, I got to say Jacksonville is moving into the top 10. The Jacksonville Jaguars, and not only in the top 10, but for the right reasons, too. Good takes, positive interviews. Jacksonville back in the jungle. Telvin Smith, linebacker for the Jags, joins me at the top of hour number three. The ATP on a Wednesday. You know that's coming, too. So we have got a lot of show. Podcast Tuesday dropped late last night. And a number of you were asking, where is it? It did drop last night. So if you've heard that and you want to talk about the Brian Fogle conversation, we could certainly do it. I'm going to reset that for you, too. That was an incredible conversation. And if you have not heard it yet, understand, these things usually run 25, 30 minutes. This one went about an hour. It was that good. And it's a great hour, a compelling hour. So look for that. First stop today, I want to talk about UCLA basketball. The three UCLA basketball players are back. Back here on U.S. soil. Fantastic. I'm glad they made it home safely. I'm glad for them. I'm glad for their families. But I am sad for all of humanity. Because that scene at LAX was a joke. They were mobbed by paparazzi, journos, and plenty of run-of-the-mill fools after they landed and they walked out of the airport. Probably the same run-of-the-mill fools who were cheering on the juice on freeway overpasses during the Bronco chase. I mean, seriously, that was a low point yesterday for mankind, for all of humankind. And it's not on the three players. It's on everybody else who showed up at LAX to shout questions, take pics, and roll tape on three college kids accused of shoplifting. If your reaction when you heard that they were flying out of China was to hop on FlightAware or FlightView to track their plane and then plan your path to LAX so you could get there in time to see them, then you need to take a long, long look in the mirror. And when you do, I'm guessing you might not like what you see. Now, if your job sent you over there, that's one thing. But if you went there as a spectator and you did it as a hobby, maybe you went over there with a few friends because you thought it would be ironic or funny. If so, you need new friends and new hobbies. Seriously, have some freaking pride and self-respect. And if you were glued to the TV watching every single update with bated breath, you're not much better. But at least you didn't waste time in traffic and then parking in an LAX parking structure just so you could run out and get some shaky footage of three teenagers walking out of an airport. If you did that, that's not funny. That's not cool. That's pathetic. There's absolutely no reason for their return to spark this level of response. They weren't political prisoners. They weren't hostages. They're college athletes who were arrested for allegedly shoplifting. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a few things I can think of that are dumber than getting arrested for shoplifting in China. But I'm not sure what's dumber. Getting arrested for shoplifting in China, or rushing to the airport to see the dummies who got arrested for shoplifting in China. Tie for last. You tell me, who's the bigger loser? The teenager who created an international incident for shoplifting in China, or the guy who rushes to the airport to get a pic or an autograph with him? Just like it's not funny or wacky or zany that President Trump apparently got involved. I know the biggest cliche in the world is, surely the president has more important things that he could be doing. But in this case, he really does have more important things that he could be doing than having conversations about three UCLA basketball players. Just like he has more important things to be doing than tweeting. Quote, do you think the three UCLA basketball players will say thank you, President Trump? They were headed for 10 years in jail. End quote. The president tweeted that. And now it's up to Steve Alford and UCLA to figure out what the appropriate punishment for what's happened really is. And I got to be honest, if you're looking for me to give you a take on that, you're not getting it. Because I don't give a damn. I don't care. I couldn't care less what they do. You want to make them do extra conditioning? Great. You want to make them run lines? Sounds good. You want to put them through the beep test every morning at 5 a.m.? Outstanding. Bench them for a couple of games? That's fine by me, too. Cancel the whole season? Good. Go ahead and do it. Because I'm not really sure that there is a punishment that fits the alleged crime of shoplifting sunglasses and possibly other items in China and the actual crime of wasting everybody's time with it. The real victim here isn't the Louis Vuitton store. It's anyone who had to hear about this story and all the different possible outcomes. So whatever punishment Alford comes up with, I hope I never hear about it, because I never want to hear anything about this story ever again. We've already suffered enough. Because whatever Alford does do to these guys, and knowing Alford, probably not a damn thing, whatever he does do to them, it still would not be nearly as harsh as what they've already done to us. Next time you see something nice that you want, put down the cash. If you don't have enough cash, keep walking. It's not that hard. And if Alford had taken 15 seconds out of that 15-hour flight to Shanghai to tell his 15 guys that, maybe this whole thing might have been avoided. Believe me, if UCLA knew that this is how the Bruins were going to start their season, they would have never brought Alford back. Hell, does anybody even know how they started the season and whether or not they won that game that they went to China to play? Hell, have they even played that game yet? I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because of all this Louis Vuitton bullcrap. I hope I never hear about this ever again. That was a tongue I slapped on my mic. You know how ballplayers get decals on the back of their helmets when they make a big play? When I have a strong rant or a strong take, I slap a tongue on my mic. It's like my logo. 1-800-636-8686. Honestly, I hope I never hear about that ever again. Other college basketball news. It's no secret that college basketball has had a few rough months. From the looks of last night, Duke haters are about to have a few rough months of their own. They look awfully good last night, right? Especially when Marvin Bagley III went down. It didn't look good then, and come to find out, it didn't matter. They still put a beating on number two Michigan State, and Grayson Allen got off. We'll talk Duke basketball. See, that's the one good thing about the UCLA story. Otherwise, you know I lead with Duke. You know I lead with Duke, and Duke haters would not have liked that. But I'll get to that later on. Bills Mafia, how you living? A quarterback change. Tyrod Taylor is out. Nate Peterman is in. And this is only about 48 hours after head coach Sean McDermott said, oh no, Tyrod's my quarterback. Tyrod is definitely our quarterback until he's not. Same week. Bills Mafia, what do you think about that move? Do you like it? I want to get to that a little bit later on. In the NBA, what do you know? The Celtics are the best team in the East. The Celtics are the team to beat in the East. Not even my take. Well, pretty much everybody's take, including Steve Kerr. But to me, what's even more important, you might think this guy's kind of weird, and you might be right, but all of you hating on Kyrie Irving for leaving Cleveland, forcing his way out, saying be careful what you wish for, you'll never make it without the king, y'all owe him an apology, because this guy knew exactly what he was doing, and it was the right choice. And you tell me right now, who needs who more? I can answer that for you. LeBron needs Kyrie a hell of a lot more than Kyrie needs LeBron right now. So Kyrie did the right thing. And I don't even need to say it's early, time will tell. I already know Kyrie did the right thing. And LeBron needs him worse than he needs LeBron. I want to double back and talk about Brian Fogel. He's the director and star of Icarus, an amazing documentary which is airing on Netflix right now. And I sat down with him yesterday. He came in studio. That was our first in-studio podcast guest. And we had a conversation for about an hour. It was absolutely amazing. I watched that movie, so I thought I knew pretty much everything about that story. And he dropped something on me late in the interview about the 1984 Olympics that was amazing. So I want to reset that for you. Got a Tiger Woods update. Almost a year to the date. Almost the exact same story involving the cat. Other NFL news. I'll tell you one matchup I love. Rams-Vikings. Case Keenum, allegedly, I guess, maybe. Mike Zimmer's not saying. And if I were Mike Zimmer, I wouldn't say either. But if I were Mike Zimmer, there's no way I'd take the ball out of that guy's hands. Keenum and Jared Goff. And that is a thing. That's a great matchup and a thing. And they're both playing really well. I want to get to that. And I've got some other NBA notes and some other things. I mean, I'm loaded. I've got so many good things to talk about today and some really, really good interviews. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Before I go to break, a couple of quick tweets. Ah, Alvy, take it easy. Easy, Tiger.
Hey,
easy. Dude. At Brian C60 tweets, if you ever want to see Twitter live, just watch the UCLA players coming out of the airport. At Headstrom Bacon tweets, the best and worst question for the UCLA players at the airport, did they bring back any souvenirs from China? At The Real Left Hook tweets, hey guys, let's go to LAX and see those three petty theft basketball players signed Inland Empire residents. I don't think that was confined to just the 909. 90 for a fact. I haven't checked out the demographics. I know for a fact that of those who did attend, of those who did show up for the reasons I mentioned, some of them definitely were from the Inland Empire. There's no doubt. But that doesn't mean that the 323 didn't show, or the 562, or the 714. I know nobody from the 949 went there. No way in hell. No way in hell anybody from the 949 went. Hawk, you didn't go, did you? Okay. Mick Cronin joins me when we come back. Paul Kariya coming up later on this hour. Telvin Smith in Hour 3.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Big first hour. I love this first hour. Coming up in about 20 minutes from right now, Paul Kariya, a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And I'm really eager to talk to him. Just like I'm very eager to talk to my next guest. We're talking college basketball. We're joined right now by the head coach of the University of Cincinnati. He is a two-time conference coach of the year. He led the Bearcats to seven straight NCAA tournament appearances. Cincinnati's 2-0. They're number 12 in the AP poll. They're number 13 in the coaches poll. And they're hosting Coppin State tomorrow night. Mick Cronin is my guest. Mick, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Always good to be on, Romy. How you been, buddy?
Doing great, Coach. Everything's good here, and it's great to hear your voice, Mick, and have you back. Listen, before we talk basketball, you and I do both share a love of horse racing. Going
yes,
back to
do.
Your days at River Downs, you worked the parking lot there, Mick, back in high school. Were you able to get out and maybe see some ponies at all during your off season?
Buddy, I miss you. I was looking for you. I spent 8 days at Del Mar.
Oh!
I spent 8 days. I was on the lookout for you. Had a great meet. I'm part of Slam Dunk Racing, which I know you've probably seen that partnership.
Sure.
We won in San Clemente this year with Madame Dance-a-Lot, grade two, and we got beat a nose in the Del Mar Oaks with Beau Recall. So it was a great meet. 8 days at Del Mar is heaven, boy. It's tough going home from there.
I got to tell you, Mick, I'm so proud of you. I wish I'd known that. I wish I'd known you were there that long. You know, I went to the Breeders' Cup, and I had to bust out of there for some reason, a personal reason. But the fact that you ran in those races, we ran once in the San Clemente. We came in second. That's a beautiful race to win. And the fact that you were in the Del Mar Oaks, Mick, I mean, you got to lay this out for me really quickly. You've coached at the highest levels, but what's it like to see your horses running in the biggest races at the highest levels?
Oh, I can't tell you how much fun it was. And to be honest with you, my daughter's 11, and both are top fillies ran in the QE2 challenge at Keeneland, October 14th. So to have her there in the paddock, she looked at me and she goes, "Dad, I've never been this nervous." It was great. So we got a third. We got a third in the QE2 in the grade one. So, but that, you know, to be able to experience it with my daughter and something we can bond over, and obviously any one day in Del Mar is heaven. But to have horses running there and in big time races and get a chance to go out, I like going out in the mornings and seeing the horses and just being around it. There's just so many good people, as you know, that put a lot of time into that sport on the backside.
Brother, preach. I know exactly what you're talking about. I wish I could explain to everybody listening exactly what you're talking about, but that's some of the best of the best. Del Mar is so beautiful, and the animals are so beautiful, and if you've got some fillies that are running at that level, that's about as good as it gets, and it's hard to get to that. Mick, I could talk to you about horse racing for another hour, but let me talk to you about your team really quickly. In the season opener against Savannah State, Gary Clark scored his 1,000th career point. You have described him, quote, as one of the greatest kids that you'll ever coach. Guys like Gary Clark, you can't help but root for them. What is it about him that makes him so special?
You know, some people, Jimmy, you meet them, they just have an aura around them. You know, Gary didn't have the easiest of lives growing up, single mom. He's the head of the house to younger brother, younger sister, and he's just got a maturity beyond his years, and he's just a special person. You know, in coaching, with young people, they struggle at times to pay attention. They struggle at times to focus. You know, doctors tell me this. I don't know. I'm just a ball coach. You know, the frontal lobe doesn't develop, and people don't understand and think like an adult till they're 24 and get the consequences of their actions. And then you meet a guy like Gary Clark, and from the time I met him, you just look in his eyes and you realize that this guy's different than everybody else. He listens to everything you say. He's such a good person. His respect for other people. The guy goes to I find out that he's at birthday parties, like of our fans. They send him, you know, nowadays with social media. I got a fan comes up to me and says, "Hey, Gary Clark came to my son's birthday party."
Wow.
I mean, it's just not normal.
No.
He's just a special guy. And guys like that, as you know, they elevate your program just because they're how good a person they are. Now, game time now, he's a killer. He can beat you. He can score. He can beat you with a block shot. He can beat you on defense as well. He was defensive player of the year in our conference last year.
You know, I wonder about that, though, Mick, because you've always said you got to have a bit of a nasty streak when you go on the court to be great. Does he have that, or maybe does it destroy that image that you have to be mean and nasty and dirty to be good?
Yeah, I think it destroys it a little bit. You know, I wish he was a little bit more selfish with his individual offense. He's such a team guy. But, boy, he's you want him in the trenches if you're in a war. So it does dispel it a little bit. I think, you know, the longer you go in sports, you realize some of the toughest guys are also great, great, great people in any sport. But I know this. He's been at Cincinnati for – this is his fourth year, and the coaches in our league can't wait for him to leave because they're sick of having to play against him. He's that kind of guy.
That's the kind of guy you want. Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin, my guest. You know, Mick, you won 30 games last year, and coming to this season, there's a ton of buzz about the team and the program. The fact that we're talking about you coming off a 30-win season and all this buzz is pretty remarkable when you look back at how it all started. There's this story that back when you were at Murray State, you played Cincinnati when they had an interim coach after Bob Huggins, you nearly beat them, and the story goes that you told an assistant, quote, "I feel sorry for the poor guy who coaches them next year. They have five seniors. They've got no recruits. Everybody's mad. They'll never hire me because I work for Hugs." Except, Mick, they did hire you. What do you remember about that first season?
I tell you, Jim, it was unreal. I mean, that I really did say that. I said, "Feel sorry for the poor SOB that they get this job."
Right.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden it's me. And, you know, I just figured it's my alma mater. It's home. And if somebody else gets the job and makes it happen, then I could never have a chance again to go home and coach at my alma mater. So it's been the experience of a lifetime. I can't tell you how hard it was. I mean, there's just not enough adjectives to describe it. And fortunately, the leadership of the school, they were patient, and they let me build the program the way I wanted to, because when you want to be at a place for a while, you got to build it the right way, And you don't, because if you quick fix a home, it's going to fall apart. You got to build something the right way so it's going to last. And so it took us a little time. Our fourth year, we got to the NIT, and then since then, we've been to 7 straight tournaments, like you mentioned. But we did have to have some patience. And you know, in the sporting world, that's not real popular. The word patience and fans doesn't coincide at all.
Well, even with schools now and school presidents, there just is no patience anymore. So when you talk about how hard it was, and there aren't even adjectives to describe how hard it was and how challenging it was, did you always know that if they were patient, that it was going to happen? Or maybe were there times where you thought, maybe it's just not meant to be?
Well, early on, Romy, we had some horrible luck. I mean, you know, nowadays the NCAA is, because they want to be popular all of a sudden. They didn't used to care about that. The NCAA, so they just made a kid from NC State eligible because they were getting killed in the media. They reevaluated their decision. I mean, that never happened, and it's happening more and more. And it's a good thing, good for Braxton Beverly. But back when we started, we lost the number one junior college player in the country. They ruled he couldn't play because he played in a Nicaraguan summer league, Hernal Hall. Then we lost our other big recruit that we had signed when we got the job because they said he played on a team in Poland where other guys got paid, but he didn't. So we lost, and then the next year we had a McDonald's All-American, tore his Achilles. The following year, our point guard, Kashmir Wright, before he ever played a game, tore his ACL. So you start to wonder when it keeps piling up, you know, because eventually you're going to have to field a good team. And we kept losing players, but fortunately that we were able to get back in 2011 a team of juniors and seniors. We had a great team that year. We lost the eventual national champs in the NCAA tournament. Kemba Walker knocked us out. But like you said, your own patience is tough to find from school presidents and fan bases. So fortunately, we were able to get through that and all those injuries. But, yeah, there definitely, I'd be lying if I didn't say that you wonder, is this thing ever going to be able to catch enough breaks where we can turn it?
Because there were so many breaks, bad breaks. Mick Cronin, my guest. Mick, one last thought. The American Conference has had some tough programs in the past few years, and now you add Wichita State. What does the arrival of Greg Marshall and the Shockers mean for the conference?
Credibility. You know, they're a top 10 team. I think they're maybe a top 5 team. You know, I'm saying it's too early to say anything with conviction, but when you have a team that won 30-something games, they have their top 9 players back. They have a legitimate long-time NBA pro in Landry Shamet at the point. They have another NBA, future NBA player, Marcus McDuffie, who's still getting healthy for them. I mean, they're as good as anybody. Now, some of the, you know, as you know, Romy, some of these elite teams are all freshmen. And Wichita State is not. Not only are they talented, obviously they're tremendously well-coached. But they have some veteran guys, and they've been through some wars together. So I think they're as good as anybody. They're a contender to win a national championship. So hopefully we are as well. And it helps your conference. It helps your credibility with the NCAA selection committee. Because that's really been our big problem here lately, Jim, is just getting some respect from the committee to get a decent seed and not have to. I love coming out west, but I want to go to Del Mar. I don't want to have to go to Sacramento and Spokane three of the last 4 years.
I feel you, Coach. Cincinnati's number 12 in the AP poll right now. They're number 13 in the coaches' poll, so they are getting some respect. They're 2-0. Mick, the team looks great. It is early, but the team looks great. I know your stable's doing great, and it's always good to have you in the jungle. Mick, thank you very much. Good luck with everything.
Always a pleasure, Romy. Hope we can catch up throughout the year.
Yeah, you got it, Coach. I'll look for you. Mick Cronin, my guest. Man, Mick, I wish I had known that you were at Del Mar for 8 days. That's my bad. That's on me, not you. Boy, I'm definitely envious. He's got a couple of really nice fillies, and those are the kind of races you want to run in. If you're Mick Cronin and you can make it out here for 8 days and see your fillies running in graded stakes, a grade one, a grade two, that is the best. Fans of horse racing know what I'm talking about, and they know his ponies. When we come back, I'm going to keep this thing moving. Very excited to say Paul Kariya is going to make a return to the jungle. He has not been on in several years. He's going into the Hall of Fame, and we're going to talk to him about that. That's coming up in less than 10 minutes. When you demand more from your car, your motor oil needs to go the distance too. Have you heard about a brand new annual protection motor oil that is selling at some retailers for up to $45 for 5 quarts? I mean, I find a hard time believing, or I'm having a hard time believing, people throw down like that. I would not do it, especially when you can buy Castrol Edge Advanced Full Synthetic Motor Oil instead. Castrol Edge is 3 times stronger than Mobil 1 against viscosity breakdown, and that's according to the Kurt Orban test on the 5W30 VisGrade, and nobody ever messes with his findings. And again, it costs a lot less. It's got the strength to go 15,000 miles between oil changes, so it's the real muscle that you need to power your engine better than some other annual protection plan that costs so much more. Titanium strong Castrol Edge works harder, lasts longer, costs less. And it's the only motor oil formulated with fluid titanium technology for maximum engine performance. Castrol, it's more than just an oil, it's liquid engineering. I have it in my cars. Castrol Edge. How about a sports update? Are you into that? Here's the very latest.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. I mentioned we had a huge first hour, and this is a big reason why. If you're on hold, stay there. Telephone call is coming up a little bit later on. We're wide open after this, but right now, and I've been looking forward to it, we're joined by a 15-year NHL vet. He led the University of Maine to the 1993 National Championship. He was a Hobey Baker Award winner, the first freshman ever to win that award. For his NHL career, 402 goals, 587 assists, 989 points in 989 regular season games. An Olympic gold medalist, a silver medalist as well, a member of the gold medal winning Canadian team at the World Juniors in 1993. He won a gold medal at the World Championships in 1994, and for our purposes, a member of the class of the 2017 Hockey Hall of Fame. We are joined right now by Paul Kariya. Paul, it is so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's been way too long.
It's been way too long, Paul, but it's so great to have you back, and I appreciate it so much. The Hall of Fame announcement came a few months back, but you were officially inducted Monday. What was the experience like, Paul, and has it all sunken in yet, or maybe are you still processing it?
Well, I'm definitely still processing it. It was interesting, actually. I got a bunch of calls from some great friends that are Hall of Famers, guys like Eric Lindros and Joe Sakic and Scott Niedermeyer, and they all said the same thing. They said the weekend goes by so quickly. Stay present. Enjoy every moment. And, I mean, it just flew by. The 4 days, it was so much fun. Tamu and I had such an incredible time. It was unbelievable.
We're talking to Paul Kariya. Going into the Hall of Fame is always special, but you mentioned Tamu. The fact that you're going in with a teammate like him, what was it like to share the entire thing with Tamu?
Well, we had so much fun. It was just from the moment that I got the call from the Hall, it was actually from Tamu first. He called me before Lanny McDonald called me, which was appropriate.
Right.
But from that moment on, you know, we've been spending a lot of time together planning parties and events, and it's just been an incredible experience for both of us, and we're so happy to go in together.
Hall of Famer Paul Kariya joining us. It's amazing, Paul, how fast it all goes. I remember when you got here, I remember watching the two of you. In fact, watching you and Tamu do what you do on the ice really was something, literally from the jump. In fact, you yourself said that from the moment you stepped on the ice together in that very first practice, you knew that something special was going to happen. The chemistry was instantaneous. How would you describe what that chemistry was like and how did it come together so quickly?
Well, it was like playing with a twin, someone, you know, playing with someone that you knew exactly what they were going to do at any given moment, and Tamu knew exactly what I was going to do at any given moment. That gave us an edge. You know, we always felt like we were one step ahead of our the guys that we were playing against, and, you know, even when we played together in the game at the Hall of Fame, and it was like we were right back from day one. Nothing's changed. You know, I knew what he was going to do, and he knew what I was going to do, and we had a great time.
You know, it's even more interesting, though, Paul. The two of you personally really couldn't be any more different. At least from the outside, it would seem like it, right? I mean, he'd show up, yeah. He'd tape his stick in about 20 seconds, but you were so meticulous and so exacting. You'd go to bed at 10 o'clock every single night, and let's just say that maybe that wasn't Tamu's style. So how were the two of you able to connect in the way that you were when you were so different?
Well, you know, we are completely opposite people. Tamu is very outgoing, loves being out in the spotlight, and I'm... much quieter, more reserved, but I think that you know, we actually think a lot alike in a lot of different areas. And it was funny when we were we were planning this event. We were having dinner with my girlfriend Valerie and his wife Sirpa, and we were talking about planning for the event, and Sirpa was kind of getting an argument with Tamu about a few of the things, and Tamu was answering every question the exact way that I would answer the question. And Valerie, we're driving home, and she's like, I cannot believe how much you guys think alike. And people don't understand it, but this is the same away from the rink. So, you know, we go about things differently, but, you know, when you get to our cores, we actually think the same way. We see the world in the same way. And like I said, it's been a beautiful partnership for a number of years.
It's so interesting. What a great response. Paul Kariya joining us. Both of you will be honored this Sunday at the Honda Center before the Ducks game against Florida as part of Hall of Fame night. Any idea, Paul, what it's going to be like to be back at the Honda Center and hearing from the Duck fans once again?
Well, I'm sure it's going to be an emotional night for both of us. For myself, spending 9 years in Anaheim, Tamu spending the bulk of his career in Anaheim. This is home for us. This is our home now. This is where we decided to retire, and it's meant so much to both of us to have the support from the fans and the people of Orange County from day one for me, and then for a number of years for Tamu. They meant so much to our careers, allowed us to do and play the game that we love to do and make a living out of it, and they supported hockey in Orange County almost for 25 years. So we're really appreciative to the fans. And this is kind of a way for us to show our thank you or show how thankful we are to them for the support they've given us.
I think it's going to be a very emotional night. Paul Kariya joins us. Paul, you mentioned Scott Niedermeyer. And Scott Niedermeyer said that there's nobody who was more dedicated to improving himself or maximizing his talent than you. And to hear that from somebody like Scott Niedermeyer, who was one of the sport's most decorated players ever, and that people would probably say similar things about him that he said about you, what's it like to hear that from him? And then where do you think that drive came from that you had personally?
Well, Scott and I are very good friends. We actually surf together at least a couple times a week, and we snowboard, and we have a good time together. But, you know, Scott will go down as one of the winningest players in NHL history, and I was lucky to play with him in the World Juniors and the Olympics, and we actually played in the Bantam Provincial Finals together. This is going back a number of years, but we lost. Scott never left the ice, played all 60 minutes of the game.
Wow.
And from that, you know, he's been a winner from day one, and has continued that on. So that's a very nice thing for Scott to say. I mean, as you said, I think that describes himself more than me, but very nice. But as you know, in terms of how that's how I was raised, as from my parents, you know, if you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability and focus 100% of your energy to being the best hockey player you can be, or to being the best student you can be, or if you're doing an interview, to try to do the best interview you can do, like whatever you're doing, be present in the moment and do the best you can.
Has anybody ever played all 60 minutes of any game on any level before? It's crazy.
Scott, well, you know, it's funny because his nickname, I don't know if it was, we always called him the Natural, because when he would play hockey, he wouldn't sweat. I mean, he was such an effortless skater, just an incredible skater, and he literally could play the entire game because he was so efficient with his movement. And even now when we go surfing, I mean, he's so natural and relaxed at it that I'm very jealous of how easy he makes things look.
Hey, Paul, I love the fact, Paul Kariya is my guest, I love that you've taken to surfing because surfers are really a different breed. Like, I've done it a couple of times, but I don't get it. I don't really have the skill for it, but I did go to school in Santa Barbara, so I hung out with a lot of guys that surfed, and these guys were just a different breed altogether. What is it, for those who haven't done it, what is the feeling like, and what do you like so much about surfing?
Well, surfing is a very spiritual experience to me, to be out in the ocean, to be in nature like that, and to feel the power of a swell that may be coming from halfway around the world, and riding that end part of that swell, it's kind of like a mystical experience. On the flip side of it, it's a great way to stay in shape. It's a great way to spend time with your buddies, and there's so many hockey players now that do it. Guys like Rob Blake and Glenn Murray and Joe Sakic, and Tamu's been out a few times. He was probably one of the best guys to initially pick it up. I mean, his first wave, he caught a wave, and he was doing unbelievable. But He is a little afraid of sharks, and that's probably a healthy thing, healthy fear. I don't have that, but I should probably have a little more of that in me. But no, we as hockey players, we've all enjoyed learning a new sport, learning a new activity like that, and getting a chance to continue spending time with each other after we retired.
Well said, and that's why guys pick up golf too. It's something different, something you can never master, but it's an entirely different experience than surfing. You know, Paul, I wonder, we've got a few minutes left. When you look back on your career, there were so many amazing moments. What sticks out to you the most?
Well, for me, when I talk about the highlight of my hockey career, what was my first Olympics in 94. My father played rugby for Canada. He always told me that the highest honor you can have as an athlete is to represent your country. So when I was able to put on that Olympic jersey and walk into the opening ceremonies, not just with the hockey team, but with the curlers and the speed skaters and the figure skaters, and to be a part of a bigger team than just the hockey team, it was an unbelievable experience. And to this day, I can remember taking that walk in Lillehammer and into the opening ceremonies. I still get chills just thinking about it. In my NHL career, the run that we had my last year in Anaheim was the highlight. You know, that was such a special run. Obviously, we got incredible goaltending from J.S. Giguere, and our team came together at the right time. And kind of both situations, we didn't finish it off, but it was a huge accomplishment in Anaheim to get to the finals, after 9 years of coming from an expansion team. And in 94, I think we were eighth or ninth ranked going in. So to win a silver medal was a huge accomplishment for that team as well.
You know, Paul, you mentioned chills, and I want to mention something, and I'm not sure that you remember it the same way. We've got about a minute left, but there was that moment in Game 6 of the 03 Stanley Cup Final when Scott Stevens hit you late and he knocked you unconscious. I get chills thinking about this moment because you came back in that game and you scored on Martin Brodeur. Not only is that, to me, one of the most unbelievable moments I've ever seen in the NHL, it's one of my favorite sporting moments ever. I don't know that maybe you remember it like that, but I thought that was an amazing sporting moment in any sport ever. As you think back on that game, what kind of memories do you have?
I don't have any memories from that game.
I see.
No, I don't remember that game the day before. You know, even Game 7, I have no memories from that game. But obviously, I've seen what happened. And, for a lot of people in this area, that's defined my career. And that's, you know, I'll be walking on the beach, and they'll come up to me and say, hey, you know, we remember where we were. We were at the arena when that happened. And, I obviously it was a huge moment for myself and our team. I wish I could have remembered it in a lifetime, but it was an incredible moment in that game and for me as a player.
I can tell you, anybody watching right or listening right now, if you were to call that play up and just look at it, you will get chills just watching it. It was an amazing thing. But then again, you had a career of amazing moments, iconic moments. Paul, I can't tell you how happy I am that you and I can get caught up like this and have this conversation, and how happy I am for you to go into the Hall of Fame. I think that was kind of a given. Everybody knew that. But now it's here. You are officially a member of the Hall of Fame, and I know it's going to be a really emotional evening in Anaheim coming up this weekend too.
Yeah, no, we're really looking forward to it. Like I said, the weekend flew by, but Tamu and I and our families will have memories that will last us a lifetime. We'll never forget those 4 days we spent in Toronto together. Made it even more special that we were able to experience it together. And same thing this Sunday at the Honda Center. I know that that's going to be an unbelievable experience for both of us, and we're looking forward to it.
Even before the interview was over, Paul, the response on social media has been absolutely incredible. So I'm so glad you took time for this. It is so good to get caught up, and I appreciate it very, very much. Paul, great to talk to you once again.
Thanks, Jim, and I want to say thank you very much for all the support you've given me as a hockey player all through my career. I really appreciate it, Jim.
I appreciate it too, Paul. I appreciate the relationship very much. Paul Kariya, my guest. Can't wait to read you the reaction after the interview. Paul Kariya showing up here in the jungle. Absolutely incredible. We go to hour number 2 and we're wide open. If you've got thoughts on that interview, hit me up right now. We'll come right back.